Well, it is colder in the upper Midwest than it is in Antarctica, Alaska, and Iceland. The government has been reopened, and people think their tax burden is too high.
Good morning.
There's a lot going on, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that are topical this weekend. The last weekend, I think, in January 2019 in podcast 799. The podcasts have been a little heavy recently, and I'm kind of easing out of the climb a little bit in terms of intensity in the next two podcasts, but in keeping with my normal approach to things, you know, I don't do small talk, so it's I can always tell when I am holding back because I don't want to get heavy. Then I can tell when I'm just doing small talk to avoid fully on and engaging. And, you know, what I've done today is I've just pulled a bunch of stories I want to talk about real quick. And, you know, when I do the headlines at the beginning of the podcast, it just has that really bad morning show sound when it sounds like I'm pulling my punches. So in this podcast, there's just a few things that I want to point out because I think they're really important to point out, but I want to keep the spirit light because there is so much going on that is the only way I can describe it is negative, and I'm going to talk about that in this podcast. Remember, you can get the Bob Davis podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher.com, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, Alexa through TuneIn, or just at TuneIn. And of course, I always appreciate the likes and the favoriting and the sharing, especially on Facebook and on Twitter. It's a retweet. But what really helps me on Facebook is shares, because that gets the podcast out into feeds that it normally wouldn't be in, because I don't have your friends. So I do appreciate it when people share podcasts that they like. And if you say something about it, like this is a weird podcast, this guy's nuts, or whatever you say, it definitely helps the Bob Davis podcasts. Also appreciate the donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Don't know when I'm going to go back out again, but you know, you'll hear more about that in the next podcast. So one of the questions I've asked often is, what do you do if you're injured at work? Do you handle the insurance and workers' comp claims by yourself, or do you get somebody who knows what they're doing to help you? And we're not talking about going to court always. We're talking about a meticulous personal injury lawyer like John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates, who can help you get what's coming to you depending on your injury. And if it's serious enough, they can help you get your life back. First of all, I'm going to give you his number, put it aside, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com with John's picture, 952-683-1351. That's 952-683-1351. Yes, an accident comes without any warning, especially when you're working or when you're having fun, so it can happen anywhere. And often workman's comp claims of various kinds are complicated. And here's an example. John represents clients that, for example, have been hurt in car crashes and have medical bills or missed time from work. One of those was a sales representative who flew to Atlanta, rented a car, and then while she was driving the rental car, got into a car crash and then is unable to work. So what he is working on is making sure that she has replacement income while she can't work because it's a work-related injury, but because it's a rented car and so forth, it gets crazy. So if you have traveling sales representatives who've been injured, or if you know somebody who's been in a car crash, or if you know somebody who's been injured at work, contact John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates, 952-683-1351, or click on jdsinjurylaw.com. There's a contact page there, and you can tell John your story, and he can help you get your life back. John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. So if you've been listening to the podcast, you know I did a whole bunch of podcasts about the pole shift and the fact that the magnetic poles are moving at the North Pole pretty substantially towards Siberia. South Pole, as far as I know, not quite as intensely as the North Pole, but if the North moves, I would assume the South also has to move. Now, we're talking about the magnetic poles. So if you heard my podcast where I took some of the people from YouTube, and in 90% of what is on YouTube, you really have to research, because most of the time it's nonsense, to be quite honest with you. So I get a kick out of those. I watch those videos late at night. When I go to bed, I kind of sit there with the phone and I watch those videos, and or my device, whatever you want to call it, and I get a huge kick out of that stuff, and about the prospect of or the specter of a potential literal pole shift, because the magnetic poles would shift, and the idea is unproven that the actual axis of the Earth would have to change. And I would like to believe that that would put Minnesota at the equator, and I would like to believe that it would happen in January, but it might go the other way. So it might actually end up with things being colder, and it sure feels like that now. So yeah, it is warmer right now in Antarctica than it is in the upper northern part of the United States. And the reason for it, so I'm just going to give you some temperatures, and to a certain extent, this will change, but by the time you hear this podcast in the last week of January, we should be into some really, really cold, cold, cold weather. According to the National Weather Service, Chicago and other Midwestern cities like Minneapolis and St. Paul are actually colder than parts of Alaska. I suggested in a recent podcast that Minnesota was colder most of the time than Alaska, and I was really wrong. Right. So it's 43 degrees right now as I speak. It's about 5 below in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and further north from here, it's about -5. And that's the actual temperature. That's not Celsius, and it's not some wind chill nonsense. So Chicago is going to be something like -2. And in Anchorage, it is 43 degrees. At last, I didn't check it just this time, but I'm reading from a news story that came out today. 31 degrees in Salt Lake City. So last night in podcast time, 22 degrees in Denver, 13 degrees in Indianapolis, -3 in Minneapolis, although it's probably colder than that now as I speak, and -3 in Barrow, Alaska, which if you know your geography from watching that TV show with the pilots in Alaska, Barrow is pretty much way up there on the very end of the border of Alaska and Canada, and it's the Arctic, basically. So it's really cold in Barrow, but they're way, way further north than where we are. So then you say, well, what about some of these other capital cities of cold, Iceland and Russia? 34 degrees in Reykjavik, Iceland, 28 degrees in Greenland, and I think the town is called Nuuk. 21 in Seoul, South Korea, which always struck me as being kind of at the same, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to say that. 19 degrees in Montreal, 14 in Kiev, Ukraine, and 7 degrees in Moscow. So, and then I love this story. This came from CBS in Chicago. They looked up what the temperature on Mars is. And so the high on Mars will be 15 degrees today. So Mars is actually warmer than the high in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And next week, it's going to be even colder. And we were talking about this tonight, the big, what do they call that, where they dive into the water, and the polar bear thing or whatever it's called. They probably will cancel that. I haven't checked, by the way, and who cares, because it's podcasting. They would probably cancel it because the weather is just too cold. And if you jump in the lake, even if the water will actually be warmer than the outside air. And the idea of somebody jumping out into -40 wind chill is just too dangerous. So I would imagine that Iceman thing or whatever it's called will get canceled. And what they're talking about is the polar vortex. But the thing that's really, really, really interesting of all, and this has to do with the magnetic fields to a certain degree, is that the polar vortex, which stabilizes winter weather in the north, is actually collapsing and breaking into two. And this is what a lot of the talk is on YouTube, with these jet streams, which are wreaking havoc with the world's weather. So the actual vortex that holds the weather into a stable system in the winter is collapsing, which means that that cold weather is swirling around and coming down to the United States. I just looked at temperatures in I just looked at temperatures in the southern part of the United States, because I saw a map which sort of indicated that the warmer weather will be in the southern part of the United States. It's only the high is only going to be 65 tomorrow in Corpus Christi, and that band of 60-degree weather will continue all the way over to Florida. So this is why I've always said, if you're going to go on vacation at this time of the year, you think you're going to go to Florida and you're going to have – it's going to be warm, and I'm not talking about Floridians – because I'm sure it's cold compared to what it usually is down there in the summer. It's in the 90s and very humid. And if you're a Floridian, winter's winter anywhere for most people. If you live in Scottsdale, you're used to 114-degree highs in the summer. So 65 is pleasant. But if you live in the north, and this happens to all of us. We were talking about this in yoga tonight. And so this is those of us who do hot yoga. So we're doing yoga in rooms of 105 degrees and 40% humidity, and it's what gets me through these cold winters, and they're all cold winters in Minnesota after a certain point in your life. You know, it's cold, and the cold is really a struggle because you really struggle to stay warm. When it's 35 or 40, and we have had pleasant weather up to now in terms of temperatures, we've had highs sometimes of 40 degrees, not more than 2 weeks ago. We were looking at highs of 41 degrees and 45 degrees. In Minneapolis, and when the temperature just goes below zero and stays there for any length of time, you really start to struggle to stay warm. Your feet are cold all the time. Your hands are cold. The heat is running full blast. You go outside and you get used to it. And I've said this a bunch of different times. I think this is really interesting. You get to the point where zero feels warm, and if there's no wind, you think, "Well, this isn't too bad." But if you don't take your gloves. And if I take my Carhartt vest, and then I have a pretty good Dickies jacket, which is very light, but it keeps me warm. And then I have like a bike shirt that really holds in the warmth for me. But if you are going to be out there for any length of time, you've got to be covered head to toe in Carhartt, or you'll really get cold really fast. And it's deceptive because it doesn't feel that warm if you go to the store and you park your car and you get out and you go into the store. The thing is, you come out literally 10 minutes later, 20 minutes later, and your car is stone cold again. So you start it up and it's still cold and it has to warm up again, to make the heat work. So it's really cold. And when the temperature – so next week, the reports are that the Minneapolis actual temperature, so we're talking Fahrenheit, is going to be somewhere around minus 30. Not the low, the high. Now, I don't know if that's true, but we're talking about well below zero. And if that continues for any length of time, well, that cold just sinks into your bones. And it's been my experience. And this goes back to when I was much, much, like I was in my 20s. I learned you've got to go to the Caribbean or further south. So you have to go to Cabo. You have to go someplace where it's equatorial. You have to go to Costa Rica and the southern part of Costa Rica in order to be someplace where it is just plain hot in order for the heat to sink back into your bones. And it literally, and I hate to keep saying literally, but it does. It changes your whole outlook on life. And I've spent a lot of winters recently just here, over the last few years. I've been here and I haven't gone anywhere. I might have gone. I remember in 2016, I went down to Iowa and I went down to, I actually did go to Florida in search of warmer temperatures and pleasant weather, and it was cold the whole time. I mean, 62, 63, 64 is not warm enough if you are from this part of the country, because once you get used to that 14-degree temperature, in order to get that out of your system, you got to go someplace where it's the sun burns you and the heat is oppressive. That's what you need. And if you can't have that, doing hot yoga is the antidote. So, and by the way, as long as I'm talking about this, I got to mention this. So for those of us who do hot yoga, it's very interesting because outside the temperature is like zero. And if it's zero for a couple of weeks, then everybody has to readjust again, because when it's 35 or 40, those rooms get really hot, and you really notice it because your body has adjusted to those zero or less degree temperatures. And then when it warms up again and it's 25, it feels hot. It's really weird. It's almost like you don't want to wear a jacket when it's 20 or 14 because it feels that much warmer. Because if it's 30 below at night and it goes up to 20 the next day, that's a 50-some degree temperature difference, really, right? Something like that. So that's huge. And if you go into hot rooms to do exercise, yoga, then what happens is your body has to adjust to that. So you see a lot of people, and it's weird to see it in the winter with these temperature fluctuations. It always happens at spring, and it always happens in the fall. When it gets cold, people have to adjust to that. The body doesn't adjust as fast as we would like. We think that we can do turn on a dime, but I've talked to people with the cold in the post-eclipse, and in the cold, I've heard people say, God, I'm just really tired. I don't understand why I'm so tired and why I'm sleeping so much or why my sleep schedule's all messed up or something like that. Well, it's because of darkness and it's because of extreme cold, because your body has to work extra hard to deal with that. So that means you have to eat more, and it means that you have to be, you don't want to get fat, but you have to eat more and you have to eat more often. So maybe smaller meals, but eating more and eating things like fats in order to keep your body temperature, warm. So that health minute is presented exclusively on the Bob Davis podcast. That's my theory anyway. If I didn't do hot yoga, I couldn't get through this because I can't right now go to, and I, why would I go, why would I waste a bunch of money to go to Corpus Christi right now and go down there and find out it's 65 degrees? I'm going to wait until later February when it's 80 or 90 down there, and then I might go. Because I'm not going down there and spend all the money to go down there, and then it's 65 degrees. And then you really feel like you got ripped off, because conceivably it could reach 55 in Minnesota in literally 30 to 40 days, and it's going to feel like 70 or 80 because we are so used to these cold temperatures. So to drive someplace and have it be 60 or 62, then it's kind of a waste of time. So that's the whole thing about the weather. And we love talking about the weather in the Midwest, but in the second half of this podcast, I'm going to talk about the quote-unquote temporary deal to end the shutdown. Well, I don't know where you live, but I live in a town where I wouldn't touch the tap water with a 10-foot pole. And it's probably safe to drink, but I do not like the taste. It tastes terrible. And then you had this issue with possible pollution from decades ago, especially in the suburbs in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Toxins also they're toxins, odorless, tasteless, and colorless, that they put in the water that are safe, but then there's this whole question of, I'm drinking stuff, do I really want to drink this? So most people spend money on bottled water, and they buy two or three cases at a time, and then there's issues with bottled water. So Joe Berg at the Water Butler Water Purification Company was telling me the other day that he can make my tap water pure and better tasting than bottled water, and it's affordable. First of all, the Water Butler can put in systems that cover all the taps in your house, or they can do a smaller version of that that really is really, really affordable, that's just the tap in the kitchen. And it's something to check out, especially if you have little kids. If you're 70 years old, it's one thing to be drinking bad water. But if you're a kid, you don't want to grow up with that. So that's another great reason to check out MasterPlumberMN.com. That's MasterPlumberMN.com. The guys there can set you up with a water purification system that will end your dependence on bottled water forever. Call 763-286-8328. Ask for Joe Berg. This is especially true if you live in St. Louis Park, Rogers, Maple Grove, Edina, Plymouth, or Minnetonka. It is time to purify your water right from the source with the Water Butler. They got 68 years of experience with plumbing, 30 years of experience with water filtration systems. 763-286-8328, 763-286-8328. Click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com or visit masterplumbermn.com. End your dependence on bottled water today forever. In thinking about what I wanted to do in this podcast, I've got the 800th podcast coming up, and I do have some things I want to talk about in the 800th podcast. No point in talking about them in the 799th podcast, but I debated on whether or not I was going to do a podcast about the stuff I'm watching on television, because I really kind of thought so much about what is going on in politics is so frustrating that I really have a hard time talking about. I had a great conversation with a friend of mine on the phone today. Both of us have been activists at different times. Actually, I had a great conversation yesterday as well with political people. And I had an interesting experience the other day at yoga. Somebody asked me, you know, I do podcasts about different things. As you know. So sometimes my podcasts are about yoga, sometimes they're about travel, sometimes they're about something weird like the pole shift or something to that effect, conspiracy theories or something. And in certain environments, when you bring up politics, it really upsets people. And it isn't that they get upset or angry at you, it's just that you can just see a switch is just turned off. And you know, I did that podcast about the fact that millennials and Gen Z are interested in democratic socialism. Polls show that they're interested in the ideas of democratic socialism to solve what they consider to be the biggest problems of our time. And I don't need to go back into that. But I was at yoga and somebody said, hey, what was your latest podcast on? Assuming I think that it would be something crazy like the pole shift. And I said, well, you know, it's about this question about socialism. You know, most millennials and Gen Z people are interested in socialism and we can be socialist. It's not that we can't. It's just that nobody is making any arguments in favor of capitalism. If they want to be capitalist, they have to be able to make those arguments. And they're not making those arguments because they're too busy arguing about whether or not Trump gave in to Nancy Pelosi, he did, or whether the wall makes any difference, or whether, you know, this day-to-day thing that happened that ended up being a viral video is worth talking about. And I just watched these people's faces just like somebody pulled a shade down. Nobody wants to talk about it. And I don't generally engage in politics at yoga because of that reason. I just don't think it's appropriate. And so, if you ask me what my podcast is about today, that's what I'm going to tell you. What I am grateful for is that I do not have to go on the radio every day and do what I just did before I started this podcast, which was scan the headlines, print a bunch of stories, actually read the stories, and research the stories a little bit before I fired on the stories. So in order to do a radio show, you have to do that every day. And it takes about 10 to 12 hours to go through that process because every single thing that comes out, whether it's about Venezuela or whether it is about Syria or whether it is about a shutdown deal or whether it is about economic growth or whether is it about, you know, ABC, magnetic pole shifts, global warming, whatever the issue is, some video, you know, what happens is that commentators jump into the fray and have to have their say about it, and as though they are the most important people in the world and what they have to say is the most important thing in the world. And I don't harbor any of those illusions because obviously I'm a podcaster. I don't have to do that. But when you're on the radio, you have to do that. You have to talk about what is the elephant in the room or no one will listen, or so people believe when they design these radio stations and these talk shows, whether they're on the radio or not. And I think that is very sad, and it's one of the chief problems with politics in this country. So lately, now if I want to engage, I'm not afraid to engage in political discussion. I'm certainly proved that I'm not afraid to engage in political discussion because I think I've put my finger on the absolute target of the socialism versus capitalism question. And most of the people that are capitalists can't make arguments for capitalists, in other words, or for capitalism. In other words, they don't even know what the arguments for capitalism are. That's such a complex statement to unpack that would take me an hour right now. What you get is reaction to whatever's going on right now. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit in the next podcast, so I don't really want to talk too much about it now. I guess what I'm trying to say is that reluctantly, because I was going to do a whole podcast about what I'm watching on television, and I've done those before. I think I've done one or two of them, and I thought, well, you know, I've done that. I really don't need to do that again, and the stuff I'm watching on TV is not that interesting. I'm watching it for another reason. You know what I've been doing? So back in the day, television, you know, most TV shows put out 115 episodes per year. Now, The Walking Dead puts out 6. You know, True Detective on HBO is going to end up being 7 or 8 or 9 episodes at the most. A season for a show like Ray Donovan is, what, 12, something like that? So in the days of Adam 12 and Route 66 and Wagon Train, they were prolific. They produced hours and hours and hours of programming. And so I'm still watching all the Route 66s. I think I mentioned that show like 4 podcasts ago, and I'm still watching because there's 100 of them every year, and it's fascinating. I figured out, so the guys that produced that show, I'm pretty sure one or two of them were also on Wagon Train, which is a great dramatic show. And one or two of them also produced The Naked City. And The Naked City movie was like film noir. And then the TV show was a huge hit because it was of its gritty realism as a cop drama in New York City. Route 66 is this weird show because it started out with these two guys driving across the country in a Corvette, and it was kind of happy-go-lucky, and it turned into the Twilight Zone at one point, and now I'm still watching it, and now it's the Naked City, and they'll be in Chicago one week, and the next week they're in New York, and the next week they're in, you know, Texas or California or someplace like that. And it's fascinating, these different episodes that come out at different times, and only fascinating to me. And I don't even know. I guess what I'm doing is I'm watching it because there's so much on-location shooting. You get an idea of what this country was like in the 1960s and how much smaller cities were and how simple things were. And yet, not much seems to have changed. It's really interesting to me. And so I'm like, well, I can't really do a show about Route 66 because I've already done that. You know, and I'm watching True Detective, phenomenal. And I'm watching, I just finished all the Ray Donovans, which is very dark. And that's it. I mean, I'm not watching half the shows people are watching. All my favorite shows are over, so I'm not going to do that. So what am I left with? Well, let's go online and find some stories. So I found a couple of stories, and I'm going to very quickly talk about them. I mentioned the polar vortex. So this is the day in history that the president blinked and decided to come to a temporary deal to end the shutdown, the vast government shutdown of about 30%. And I think it's instructive that the thing that seems to have triggered it is that several score air traffic controllers in the Newark, in the Washington area, which runs flights from Newark and New York City and elsewhere, decided to sick out the last couple of days. And there have been huge, huge snarls in the air traffic system. I haven't talked to my pilot friends, so I don't know what their situation is. But I do remember at the air show last year, one of the wide-body 777 pilots telling me that she said, our biggest problem as captains basically is the most hazardous part and the most stressful part of our job is getting a gate or getting away from the gate and out to the runway and off the runway. Once we get in the air, we're fine. It's actually at the airport that we have the biggest problems. And I think that this came pretty close to the trigger to get Trump to do something. And of course, it's being touted as a big victory for Nancy Pelosi, which in the short term, it is. We'll see what happens in quote unquote 3 weeks. But it's interesting to me for a couple of reasons. Trump talks a tough game, but tends to kind of cave in. He did it with the Chinese, and Nancy Pelosi apparently has his number despite all of the rhetoric. So we have to see what happens in 3 weeks. And again, as far as the whole administration is concerned, I am hedging my bets. I'm going to wait and see where we're at right before the election in 2020. And where he is at that time. And I think the next waypoint, to be quite honest with you, is going to be 2020. I mean November of 2020. I don't think there's going to be a waypoint until then. I think at this point, it's all a bunch of little things. You could literally go away and come back in the fall of 2020, and I wouldn't say that you would have missed anything, but I don't think you're going to get a read on what's actually happening in terms of his future and the future of the country until then, whether he gets elected or reelected. I mean, gets reelected or someone else is elected. So that's the kind of outlook on it. I I'm almost disappointed. I'm not in favor of Discord, but if he really believed that he was going to keep the government shut down for the rest of the year or permanently in order, or quote unquote 30% of the government in order to get what he wanted in terms of the wall, I'm a little surprised that he caved in, which to me is kind of a symbol of his almost chaotic presidency. So a final story here today. So in my conversations with friends recently, one of the things that I've noticed with especially Trump supporters is they will tell you the economy is booming. And this really irritates me because, first of all, and this is the final story, that we're starting to see stories coming out about the world economy and the U.S. economy, which is doing a little bit better than the world economy, which is doing a little bit better than it was 7 or 8 years ago. We are still struggling to rebuild out of the 2008 financial crisis in the United States, although I hate to call it a financial crisis, but, you know, the whole crash of the real estate market in the United States and a world slowdown in 2008. And that's the most important thing to point out. But in the last year, so we had one quarter of 4.1% economic growth. It started out as 4.5%. It was revised down to 4.1. It will probably go through one more revisions. That was the second quarter of 2018. And now we're just coming on to the final numbers that'll be released from the federal government on growth for the fourth quarter, which I wouldn't want to speculate on what it is. But most people, so you take all four quarters of growth and you recalculate, and economic growth for 2018 will probably be somewhere around 2.5%. So there was certainly a big outburst of growth for one quarter when President Obama signed the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act, which was the $1 trillion economic stimulus. And perhaps, I'm not going to say that this is the reason, but it may have been the passing of the tax bill, which is decidedly Keynesian in that they are borrowing $1.5 or $1.7 trillion from the bond investors and from taxpayers to give us, quote unquote, a tax cut. Moreover, I am seeing stories about the Baltic Index and about the European situation and global performance and economics from China to Europe as being much slower than it was. So I think it's very important to point out that the U.S. economy is not booming. It's doing somewhat better than the rest of the world, and may not be doing that much better year on year than in previous administrations. What's happening is the government is spending money in defense. It's spending money in various areas, and that has a big impact on the economy in general. And if you're a capitalist, do you really want a country where the economy is determined by the amount of government borrowing and spending? That's very important. Finally, a lot was written about the economic effects of the tax bill, which I read the whole bill. And one of the first things I came away with was, first of all, I said it in several podcasts, so I'm going to say it again. It is not a reform of the tax law in the United States. It is a rewrite of elements of the 87 tax reform package signed by Ronald Reagan, which took him most of his first term and some part of his second term to get passed. It wasn't something that was done rather quickly. And my takeaway from reading the tax bill is what they giveth, they taketh away on earth. For example, the best example is you can't write off entertainment anymore. And there's other things that you aren't able to write off, whether it's local taxes or state taxes, although in some states they're keeping it. In Minnesota, you're going to be able to still get the deduction. I don't know how that's going to work. I'm not a tax preparer, so forgive me. But one of the stories that came out this week, and this is in the LA Times, was the tax preparer are now warning people that their refund may be smaller than usual this year. The chief reason is the withholding. So people had higher levels of withholding. If you have on your W-4 taken more money out of each paycheck, then you may not get back much money in terms of the refund. And that's going to have an economic impact. I don't like the idea that the government takes our money and then gives us a little bit back and calls it a refund. We should pay our tax bill at the end of the year in total, and the bill should come due on Election Day. That's when people should pay their taxes. And things in this country would be substantially different, because if you want low taxes, that's how to do it. Finally, this is an interesting story, because this came from obviously somewhat of a biased source, but it's a Rasmussen poll, and Rasmussen is generally kinder to conservative concepts, but that doesn't mean that they're wrong. Here's the headline. 65% believe the tax burden is too heavy on the middle class. And considering the whole thing about favoring democratic socialism and support for Democrat candidates in this country right now, it's very amusing to me that Rasmussen has found that 65% of Americans think the burden is too heavy on middle-class taxpayers. 4% said taxes on the middle classes were too low, while 20% said taxes were just about right. Goldilocks! And so what they're saying is it's a plurality of respondents who say that taxes on small businesses are too high, and on the middle class, taxes are too high. Now, that can be interpreted in a number of different ways, but one is that there is support for taxes, a 70% tax bracket on the rich billionaires, who will, of course, immediately take steps to avoid paying the 70% tax on their earnings. So those are the big stories. And then in my next podcast, which will be Podcast 800, I'm going to talk a little bit about podcasting. So get ready for that. Hey, quick reminder. Yes, I do hate my printer, and I talk about it all the time. And I hate it not because it's a bad printer. It's an HP printer. It's great, and it's a laser printer. I hate it because I hate paying top dollar for print cartridges. It literally is a budget buster, especially if you're in business for yourself. So what do? Well, you go to Cartridge World in Maple Grove. They can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores on print cartridges or printers, ink, and their cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. In fact, I think mine is better than the one that I bought at the big box store, which I will never have to go to again. Cartridge World in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway, 763-420-6632. Ask for Jason or click on the Cartridge World banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Now, it's quite a ways off, but guess what? Come July, the air show over in Oshkosh is going to be a go. And if you're a pilot, then you want to know that Alpha Systems is going to be there. You guys know I've talked about Alpha Systems before. Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. If you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, and if you love a pilot and you want them to be safe on takeoffs and landings, the Alpha Systems angle of attack indicator is a definite plus to be put into your plane's avionics package. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at the Bob Davis Podcasts. So once again, not saying that the economy is falling apart, just saying that we should take a little closer look at some of the claims that people make to fully understand what is being done or not done in terms of solving the systemic economic problems in this country. And I'll do more podcasts about it. I just have experienced the fact that if you put up a podcast and it has anything to do with the economy, no matter how much you boost it, no one will listen. So anyway, a little quick story about the economy in this podcast. Thanks for listening to Podcast 799. On our way to Podcast 800, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Tonight.